Work.
Recording in
I want to
progress.
first of all thank everyone for being here. So today we're sharing results from an independent economic impact assessment of pork research investment in Canada. And we're going to walk through the findings and then we're going to open it up for Q&A and discussion. And just before we begin, I want to share a couple of quick housekeeping items. First in French, l'interprétation française est disponible en utilisant l'icône du globe au bas de votre écran. So French interpretation is available using the globe icon at the bottom of your Zoom screen. And also throughout the webinar, please submit questions using the Q&A function. And we're going to save those questions and we'll address them following the presentation. There'll be a Q&A session. I also wanted to mention that the session is being recorded and it'll be available on SIP's website. So, just a quick reminder about SIP. We coordinate pork research nationally, bringing together producers, industry, government, and academia around shared priorities and turning those priorities into funded projects and practical outcomes. And the main vehicle for that has been the swine cluster under Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's AgriScience program. That's a matched funding model that makes national coordination possible. And I do want to acknowledge AEFC. Their partnership has been foundational, and the results you're going to see today reflect that shared commitment. So the assessment we'll be presenting covers the first three swine clusters from 2010 to 2023. That's nearly 50 million in combined investment. And the results quantify what's been delivered in farm-level efficiency, in demand growth, and then in broader economic benefits for Canada. And the reason this really matters, especially right now, is what it tells us looking forward. Canada's pork sector, we've always relied on research to advance things like animal health and welfare, nutrition, quality, and sustainability. And the challenges we're facing aren't getting simpler. The need for science-based solutions is greater than it's ever been. So the real question, when we think about this impact assessment, is what does it take to keep delivering results like these? And are we positioned to do it? The funding landscape is changing. Canadian public investment in agricultural R&D has been on a long-term downward trend. The closure of federal research centers announced a few weeks ago puts all of that into real focus. And all of that puts more weight on coordination, industry working together in a stronger way, and also making the case for the returns that justify continued investment and a continued commitment in research. So the data you'll see today and the story that you'll hear today shows that it is worthwhile. The results you'll hear about do make a strong case for doing more. So now with that, let me introduce the team behind our economic impact assessment. And I'll mention these are some of the top agricultural economists in Canada. So we were very privileged to work with them on this impact assessment. We have Dr. Peter Phillips, who's a distinguished university professor emeritus at the Johnson Shoyama Graduate School of Public Policy at the University of Saskatchewan. Dr. David Castle is a professor of science, technology, and innovation policy in the School of Public Administration at the University of Victoria. And Dr. Stuart Smythe is a professor in the Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics at the University of Saskatchewan. So with that, I am very pleased to hand things over. I will pass it over to Dr. Peter Phillips, who will lead today's presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Our team was asked to give both very specific and more general observations about the impact and the direction and impact of research in the swine area. And so if there's three numbers you walk away with, 50 million is the aggregate investments in the first 13 years, 14 years of the investments. There are another 20 million that are underway, and we have not assessed those yet. The aggregate return to the national economy is about a quarter of $1 billion. That's a substantial part and a significant contribution to agriculture. And the ROI is about 30% on your investments. Now, some people say that looks pretty good, and it is good. But as we go along, we'll talk a bit about how you might interpret those numbers in differing ways to know about what you should do over the next while. Okay, there we are. As discussed, or as Daniel pointed out, we have this is a team effort. Stuart, David, and I were the principals on this, and we had a couple of very strong research assistants who did the heavy lifting of turning raw data into useful insights into the research space. And our team is called Valgen. We've been working together for about 20 years now, doing a variety of research and policy analyses. So why does this all matter? The pork sector is quite vibrant. It's had good growth. It's had export. It's quite an export-driven sector. It sort of meets a lot of the bells and whistles, and in that sense, it makes it an important part of any regional or national conversation about where agriculture fits into the future economy of Canada. In absolute numbers, it's large. It's not massive, but it's large, particularly in the agri-food space. It's important because it's one of the natural products that we have created and built a comparative advantage to compete against the other producers around the world. So this is one of the natural things, one of the things that should be part of our drive of agri-food innovation. And part of that is that creating and sustaining your comparative advantage is critical it's vital that we have research that underpins that. It's sort of the basis for productivity gains. And productivity gains in this sector, relative to many other sectors in the Canadian economy, have been quite strong. So the industry writ large, the agri-food industry, is running between 2.5% and 3% per annum productivity gains, which is important for competing against foreigners, but it's as or more important for competing against other domestic uses for your land, labor, and capital. If you can't remain competitive and producing product with profit, workers, capital from other areas, and land itself will be bid away and for other uses that are non-agricultural. So it's an important part of the sector. Now, so I think I've touched on all of those areas. And I guess the other area I should mention is that as the world gets, the climates change, as people move about more, as products move about, biosecurity is becoming a more present and concerning element there. And it's partly our biosecurity in terms of how we sustain the environmental footprint locally, but how we contribute to global targets, and how we maintain and secure the products against infectious diseases and other things that can be transmitted. So let's talk about our what we did. In the first instance, we looked at the inputs to the research space. There have been four clusters. As we're in the fourth cluster, as mentioned, this study looks at the three clusters. Ag Canada is the foundational partner to the research effort, and then, as you can see in the bars, the amount coming from producers and industries has been rising as a proportion of the total investments throughout this period. It was a modest amount in the first period, but with each successive cluster that's been developed and negotiated, leveraging has been required so that it's now getting closer to the 50% rule that governments are increasingly looking for in all sectors, not just in agriculture. In the first instance, this research hires people to do research. Some of them are in public institutions, some are collaborating with private companies, some are in universities. in total, over the four cycles, the four clusters, because we're into the fourth one, we can identify 224 researchers across Canada that have been funded and motivated by the interests of the swine industry through this program. They're hosted in 74 research institutions, and as you can see, the major ones are scattered pretty much right across the economy and are situated close to major production areas of pork. And they've been motivated and directed to 72 research projects. Now, these 224 people are an asset. They're not just a consumption pattern. They create capacity to respond to interests that are long-term and planned, and those short-term emergency responses. So they do actually cluster. They're not isolates. They built a national fabric, a national network of scholars and practitioners who can respond in real time to problems. And we've been able to identify that the network is quite resilient. And while the pending changes in Ag Canada are concerning because they differentially affect different product spaces, or different research targets, the network as a whole is resilient, but there are some concerns that the industry might be interested in want to raise as the discussions go on about further changes. So we looked at the $50 billion or $50 million invested across the space in the context of a variety of different ways, and each of them adds value in potentially different ways. Animal health and nutrition directly lead to a yield and value. Welfare and quality improve the marketability of your product, and the environment splits both ways. And so each of these contributes. They're not equal in terms of the investments out there, but they give you they're all fit in the context of what you've been investing in and trying to solve as part of an industry effort. So this is a bit of an overview, and I'll walk you through it in a few minutes just to give you a sense of what we've done. If you look over to the right-hand side, it looks a bit complicated. It looks like a wiring diagram you might find on the back of your fridge. But essentially, we as economists, we have to figure out what do we count as inputs and what do we count as outputs, and what how do they connect in some useful and credible way. So on the input side, there's money coming through the swine innovation cluster. And directly with the partners. And so that is a direct input. We're not an isolate in the world. We actually connect to the rest of the world. We draw ideas from them. We draw technologies from them. So there are some spill-ins. There are some benefits we get of just being aware of what's happening in the rest of the world. So we have to count for that. That we can't claim credit for it, but we have to, it's contributing to some of the improvements we can see. And then there could be other factors. There's things like market growth, you know, as we talk about how we assess the size of the growth of the market and how much of that can be contributed back to the efforts of the swine cluster. So that's the inputs. There's then a couple of activities, and we've focused in on two: research and market development. And those have direct outputs. On the research side, there could be some new contributions to new pedigrees. There's tools, there's processes, there's business models, all of the things that can improve the relationship between your particular inputs, your feed, land, labor, and capital, and the pounds of meat that you're able to sell into the market. On the right-hand side, you'll see that market development can be everything from quality attributes to new and reorganized market arrangements that can contribute, and some of the programming directly is about improving the market. So the outcomes are productivity growth and market growth. And in the middle, you'll see this research capacity point, which I already made, which is that these 224 researchers, which aren't all active today, but that national network you've invested are a bit of an insurance policy. They're there to help and respond to emerging threats and emerging opportunities. And so the challenge of these two is a combination of sustaining and growth. And we estimated on the right-hand side, the research effort that led to productivity growth generated about $20 million of immediate on-farm productivity gains. Those are gains that you as producers should be able to estimate in your own operations. And then on the market development side, all the attributes that were the research was done contributed to what was a large market growth, but we've only allocated about $47 million of that market growth, that pork demand, to the industry. So those are the two main direct ones. We haven't directly valued the insurance stream, but it is a marker on the table for dealing with things that may come up in the next while. So let's talk about each of these directly. Productivity is primarily driven by a combination of feed and management and managing the losses of operations. And so as a proxy, we know it's not perfect, but when it's impossible to look at the micro and macro level and have them add up in any useful way. We looked at feed conversion ratios and uses them as a proxy for total factor productivity. And Canada's not quite the doesn't have quite have the highest feed conversion ratios, but its efficiency is rising at or above the average rate for most other areas. So we looked at what cost savings are there. We looked at the inflows. We looked at the effect of changing fertility and production and the various losses, and came up with that $20 million analysis there. As an example of this, Chantal Farmer's work at team is at AFC Sherbrooke has been doing some work on improving sow milk yield. So the problem was that feed restrictions can reduce the mammary development, which limits milk yield, which is a critical element in piglet growth and survivability. They did research on a whole variety of high fiber feeding support systems and other lactation support managements and various nutritional platforms, and discovered that by shifting and by adding some parts to the feeding regimes and by some shifts in the production methods, that they were able to demonstrate 40% greater mammary gland growth, which matters because it leads to stronger piglets, fewer losses, and better lifetime performance. And so there's a direct product. We didn't explicitly look at that one. We looked at the aggregate of 20 or 30 of these types of projects that contributed to productivity. And that was the $20 million return. On the market side, the market's grown a lot. The market's grown partly a lot, but because the population has just grown, partly because there's other people doing a lot of marketing, the retailers, the pork industry itself outside of the research community, and a number of other external factors. So we allocated about 25% of the market growth to the research that's helping to differentiate quality, to sustain quality standards, and to essentially build consumer confidence and export readiness. So it's about contributing to that our share of the domestic and international market. A good example of that is Manuel Juarez's work at AAFC Lacombe, where he's been working on a more objective pork quality classification system. The problem is that the classifications are similar, but they're not fully consistent across plants and across assessors. Some key traits are still graded subjectively, and different processes do use different grading systems. And so the quality assured product downstream to end users will vary depending on its source. So what did the research do? They evaluated grading technologies across the major processors, and some of them are listed there, and they have identified various gaps preventing consistent national adoption of standards. And so in the end, they established some baseline evidence for objective grading automation and supports for stronger Canadian brand credibility. So this is about improving buyer confidence, improving support for market differentiation and export competitiveness. And as I say, we allocated about 20, there were a whole variety of projects like this. We allocated about 25% of the market growth to this activity. And as the third one, which we haven't fully quantified, but it's this area of risk management. And that is that this network of 224 people, we estimate it's still 170, 180, because some of the early people have retired and some of the later people may be let go through Ag Canada. The depth and breadth of this network provides resilience for our capacity, but also gives us a way of responding to what the rest of the world, what we're facing that the rest of the world is identifying, but also to help to drive some of the conversations about research design and research priority setting globally. The fact that it's not a whole bunch of isolates, but it is actually interconnected by lines, by partnerships, by relationships. This network can be mobilized quickly, and it responds organically. It doesn't need to be prompted by an external person saying something. It says we see an event occurring. We want to move and respond to that in real time. And it has real world effects. And here's one that came out of my host university, Stuart Mine, Terry Fonstad, one of our colleagues from the Department of Engineering, got involved in transport biosecurity. There was the risk that was identified by industry and producers was that the livestock transport was a key pathway to disease spread, and PED was outbreaks were one of the targets that they thought could be managed by better biosecurity in the trucking world. So that this it was a multi-part exercise. They looked at trailer cleaning and disinfection practices. They used the best science available to confirm how to manage for those pathogens in trucking spaces, and then they looked at human practices to see how worker flows might contribute or be managed to limit the cross-contamination between trucking loads. So that in terms of adoption, it's partly on its way. There was a truck wash technology that was developed to improve the interior washing system. There was a truck genie trailer temperature sensor that can be used that is now, we understand, being used in many parts of the sector to ensure the cleaning process hit that 75% target for 20 minutes. And that these are all built into standards for cleanliness and validation. So this reduces risks of outbreak, it secures our biosafety and its readiness, and protects farm productivity, because it's a shame to have a produce an animal that then gets sick and is downgraded in the market. So in terms of the economic effect, the $50 million was made up, remember, by AAFC putting in money, by industry putting in money, and producers. And many of you will be producers. So we looked at what's sort of the ratio between what you put in and what you got out of this combined effort. The estimate from SIP is that about $8.4 million was invested by producers in through the commodity checkoff organizations. And those contributed to leveraging the investments by AAFC and the other partners. So 8.4 became 50 million direct effort. There were $67 million of direct benefits that were spread across the system, and the ROI for that research portfolio was about 30%. Now, the way we calculate research, some people say, how does 50 to get to 67 and that lead to 30%? Some of that investment was a long time ago, some of the returns are now, and so we have to bring them all into a common dollar perspective. And we've truncated the benefits at 2024. Most of this research is actually going to have its major impacts in the next number of years. So the returns are on that part of the investment are probably higher than 30%, but this is the cutoff point we used. And the critical thing is that leads to some of that research outcome is that those research dollars are not just scattered in pockets of research, that they're coordinated nationally, partly by SIP's effort, partly by the efforts of the teams that SIP invests in. Many of those people take on leadership roles and both lead SIP research, but also lead research from that's funded through other mechanisms, and so they build on each other's strengths and specific knowledge. Now that's the producer level effects. Because this is an Ag Canada investment, one of the things that they need to know for securing national support for programming is what are they getting out of it? What's it adding to in terms of the aggregate national economy? And the $50 million is generating a variety of impacts that are measurable and generate revenues and taxes and other things for other parts of the economy. The research activity itself has its direct spending, 50 million, but that leverages other activity that purchases and expenditures that lead to about $85 million of direct impact, direct and indirect and induced impact of research. The farm efficiency ripples, that's that $20 million, actually more than doubles when we look at its impact across the economy and the Canadian economy. And the port growth, that 47 million becomes about 101 million. So in aggregate, about a quarter of $1 billion, just under a quarter of $1 billion of economic impact is being generated by the investments through these three clusters to date. Drawing this back to individual producers, we estimate that there's about an 8-to-1 return on the producer dollar contributed to this larger investment. And so the basic calculations is about 7,500 producers who on average have about 1,800 hogs. And there may not be many that actually have those numbers, but that's the average across Canada for all the producers. They, in aggregate, with the 8.4 million, invested about $1,100 over the 14 years period, which is about $80 a year. Not a lot of money. Most of us spend more than that on coffee. And they produced a return of about $8,900, or an 8-to-1 ratio. So it's a strong argument for producers being sustained, and it's why we need to keep Ag Canada as a core part of this research space. Now, part of what we wanted to bring to the table is that the research doesn't. You don't do research today and get the returns tomorrow in most cases. One of our colleagues in the United States calls research slow magic. The graph down below shows that everything below that line is costs, everything above the line is benefits. Research takes time. Most of these projects take 3 to 5 years to come to completion. And even when they're completed, there's a period of gestating, of translating research results into practice, into something that somebody in the supply chain can use. Those processes take time, and only with the first adoption do you start to get the immediate benefits flowing. And then a lot of the benefits are actually not realized in the first version of that technology, but in subsequent versions. So a lot of the value is in the embedded knowledge and technology in future generations of whatever we learn to do. So this is a long-term process. In some parts of the industry, the estimate is that the peak ROI, the peak return on your research dollar, is as much as 23 years in the future. So what does this mean for research priority setting and research investments? It means you don't want to have stop and start in a research space like this. If you stop, you may not have any effects in the next 1 to 3 years, but you may have a material flattening of the growth of the results and a softening at some point out in the future. So this is a long-term element, and these stop start cycles are generally what we call return on investment eating transactions costs. It's very expensive to shut down a program, lay everybody off, and then 2 years later, or 1 year later, or 3 years later, say, "Oh, we need that again," and to start it back up. You don't just lose the gap; you lose multiple years on either side, which leads to longer periods of softening in impacts down the road. One of the things that concerns us as we got near the end of this project is we realized that while we were dealing with a policy framework, the Ag policy framework that was established out through 2020, that's still in place till out through 2028, the new agricultural policy framework is already under conversation, and so part of what we've done is directed to helping the industry figure out how they can contribute to that. Along the way, the federal government a while ago announced major cuts to the bureaucracy, and now we're starting to see the impacts. And some of the important centers of research like LACOM are on the chopping block in Ag Canada. So those are of particular concern for this industry because they will reduce the resilience of the research system it's created. The biggest and equally large concern is that we're not the only ones cutting research in the agri-food space. The United States has cut 18% of their research budget, and they're the single largest research organization in the world. So 18% of a large share will have a knock-on effect on what we can hope to spill into our market from their research. And internationally, some of this research is funded by the Consultative Group on International Ag Research, and they're cutting even worse. The research cuts are as much as 30%. So particularly as we start to cut not just hair, but right to the bone in some of these research networks, coordination may be a critical element to sustain and deliver continuing results. So in terms of our basic recommendations, we strongly believe that sustaining national research effort, not up and down, is a critical precondition to long-term success, to realizing that slow magic of research. Investing to match is a proven model. It leads to returns. Now, I will say, as an economist, 30% is nice to hear about, but as an economist, it should be less. 30% tells me you're leaving a lot of research outcomes on the table. We're not pushing the envelope quite as far as we should. So 30% suggests we're underinvesting, not we should not be happy with 30%. Coordination is critical, especially in research spaces like this that are not huge, but and there are ways of optimizing the flow of knowledge from the rest of the world and across the market space. And maintaining a balanced research portfolio is probably equally critical. Remember, I mentioned that there's five or six different priority areas. If one of those becomes weak, it diminishes the ability to get the synergies across those spaces. So the two main actions we're strongly recommending is that the industry not just sustain but strengthen their long-term commitments to investment and coordination. As Daniel pointed out, the whole industry, not just this part of it, the whole industry is investing less relative to their gross value added than they did 20 or 30 years ago. That's not a good sign. It means it's lack of ambition. Meanwhile, on the government side, they should respond accordingly. That sustained funding from industry should be a signal that these are important sectoral, regional, and national priorities that warrant further investment. So the bottom line, in the 14 years under study, the cluster strengthened productivity, contributed to expanding market and market returns, mitigated risks for emerging issues, and delivered just under $250 million of economic impact globally, and generated real returns, 30% return on the portfolio in writ large, 8-to-1 return per producers, and the And in our view, that's a strong story to tell yourselves to secure and to sustain and secure your contributions to this space. But it's also an equally strong story to tell the federal and provincial governments that are part of the cluster program. Thank you. Let me release my slide, and now we'll go to the Q&A portion of this.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. I think, we can all see the strength of the evidence in this assessment, and this is very much a timely conversation. What stands out to me is, first of all, how clearly the data makes the case that coordinated research investment works, that it delivers returns for producers, that it grows markets, and that it strengthens our resilience. And I think that's a message that we as an industry need to be carrying forward as we move into important policy discussions over the next few years that are going to shape the next decades in terms of research outcomes. So I do want to open it up to everyone who's online for your questions. Feel free to submit. There's a Q&A button at the bottom of your screen. Throw in your questions. We have Peter, who's available to answer, David Castle, and also Stuart Smythe are available as well. So we're going to get to as many questions as we can. All right, I see one question that has come in. So, question is, as universities and colleges face their own budget pressures, how vulnerable is the research capacity that the pork industry depends on?
The universities are probably a little bit more secure than the public space in that while they do have shifts of priorities and hiring, faculty are tend to be hired for most of their career. And so the real risk is not that they're going to let go mid-career scholars. It's that there may not be as many positions for early scholars to come in, and Ag Canada has been a critical pathway to that. We train them, Ag Canada mentors them, and then they move into to research leadership positions across Canada. The other risk is at the other end that people my age retire and they're not replaced by anybody who has similar skills and attributes and interests. So it's necessary across the industry to signal intent and interest and enthusiasm, and to create the structures that keep the flow of young, bright minds into the research space, but also keeps commitments to research by renewing programs that come to their natural end because people retire or move away for other reasons.
Okay, thanks. Stuart or David, anything to add to that?
Nope, not at my end.
Maybe the only thing to contribute would be is that the competition from universities for funds through the tri-council agencies is increasing, and the success rate is now less than 10% for most of the major competitions. So those public dollars are probably going to be a little bit constrained over the next few years, just given the increase in competition.
Good point. Thanks, Stuart. Okay, so our next question comes from John Webb, who's asking, how far can we rely on international collaboration in swine research?
It's necessary but not sufficient. The we're a major part of the pork industry globally, but we're still a small part. And so in most research subject areas, if you look at the direct applications, we may have a measurable share of the research that's out there. But in terms of the precursor knowledge and skills that are needed to make that science work, and often the downstream applications, we're a small part of a very big pot. So it's important to be connected, but we still need to be experts in our own homes. So there's a balancing act between connection and big borrowing and stealing from the best ideas around the world, and the doing it here uniquely. So there are some things that are uniquely our problems, so we should be taking the lead on those. But some of these diseases and animal health and nutritional problems are global problems. So we don't want to ignore what's going on there, but we don't want to rely on it. And historically, the scholarly community says you need a strong research capacity domestically to absorb the best of the world. That if you don't have the people who can understand the early research into a space, you often are a slow adopter, which means that you're adopting under duress, not with high returns being expected as an early adopter.
Thanks, Peter. Stuart or David, anything to add to that?
Not for me.
Nope, I think that answers it.
All right. Next question is from Murray Pettit, who's asking, what is your estimate of the impact of the AAFC cuts? What impact will that have on agriculture research in Canada?
We've been scratching away at that a bit. One of the bits of the research we did for SIP was to do a bit of a basic social network analysis. So remember, I mentioned that SIP's investments have generated 224 people who drew money out of this to do research that was related to pork investment, and that supported late career, mid career, earlier career, and students to study. It also brought in on board a whole bunch of partners, and some of them are universities, some of them are private companies. Ag Canada's the anchor to that as they cut their programming, just the absence of dollars is the first risk. But as I mentioned, two of the three examples I used of strong research outcomes that are leading to the impacts we estimated are in spaces where there's either planned shutdowns or directed cuts to the Ag Canada programming. So in a worst case scenario, if Ag Canada really does everything they plan to do and perhaps a little bit more, there would be a reduction in the resilience of the space. And one of the things that when we looked across those five or six subject areas, productivity seemed to be okay. You know, there's so many researchers that have been funded in that space through the SIP programming that no matter what they do, the productivity is going to probably be there. The quality attributes, which is where the higher returns have been, are the ones that will be cut more. And those are the ones that we don't know what the tipping point is there in those nested sub networks that we've estimated, but they're getting quite small. We're losing people who have been research leaders. We're losing people who were big connectors in the space, and so there's a real risk that as if they do this badly, as in they just say issue pink slips to everybody, that there could be a major disruption. If they do it thoughtfully, they may be able to achieve some of their savings without massively disrupting the system. So it's still early days. You know, the federal government's announced that they want to lose 25 to 35,000 workers, and they've issued over 60,000 notices. So they know not everybody that's got a notice is going to go. So until we see how this settles out in terms of the knock-on effect, we won't know how much the pork sector itself has taken a hot cut relative to all the other agri-food sectors. And you know, people don't just go away if they're laid off from a research space. They sometimes move off to do something as good or better. There's a famous innovation story that comes out of Ottawa, where every time Nortel and the national telecoms research facilities shrunk, these people didn't vanish. They just went down the street, hung out their shingle, and created what became a huge digital play in Ottawa. So what we need to do is think about what will happen if these people are disassociated from the Ag Canada research space. Do they just migrate out of Canada? Do they go to a university? Do they set themselves up as private contractors? You know, that will determine what the overall effect of these program cuts are.
All right, thanks, Peter. Stuart or David, anything to add?
Well, I would just add a little bit of nuance. Over the past, the post-pandemic period, the run-up on public accounts in the federal system was increase in personnel, not increase in program spending. And so these two things have to be separated as we try to think about what the impact can be on the sector, because there is currently If you go back 5 years, there's a misalignment between the number of people working for the federal government versus the size of the programs, and the budgets did not increase proportionately. So in that respect, the point that I think Peter landed on is the one that I would emphasize, which is that it just depends on who goes. It's not actually really, I mean, there will be operating cuts and programmatic trimming to be sure. But it's how that ends up being intertwined with which personnel go. So I actually see the numbers for all the science-based departments and agencies in the federal system, and some of the cuts are really significant. But it's unclear who is leaving. It's not often at the deputy level. It's often middle ranks of people that are going, which is risky because you're catching highly qualified civil servants mid-career. And they're oftentimes the ones that are the real doers. They're the ones that actually get things done in the programs. Other departments are not facing that. They're facing things like potential reduction in numbers of people without reduction in budgets through attrition. So Canada Space Agency would be an example of that sort of thing. So it's going to have to be a space that is monitored very, very closely. But the story that we've been telling is that whatever happens, the real economic loss to the sector is discontinuity. It's start stops in programs is really, really harmful in terms of overall contribution to productivity.
Okay, thank you, David. All right, next question comes from Gilles Bergeron. He's asking or commenting that you said a 30% return is good, but it shows that we're leaving research opportunities on the table. So the question is, what else should we be looking at, or what should we be doing differently?
Yeah, I'm going to combine that with Abigail's question because I think they're the same one, which is how much does our study tell you where to focus your attention? And apart from the demand versus productivity question, we didn't drill down into the specific projects and do the micro analysis of particular programmatic targets. In a lot of cases, the particular needs of the industry would be a better place to start. And one of the things I know from being part of the research management system, I'm part of the Genome Canada world, chair of one of the boards, is that for every competition we have, when we ask for good ideas of people who need some funds to do research, when the money is finally allocated, there's usually 20 or 30% of the candidates that are still unfunded. And that's true. I understand that in most provincial competitions, in most of the commodity groups I talk to, they say that they always run out of money before they run out of really good ideas. So in many ways, I don't think it's a matter of starting fresh. It's a matter of signaling higher ambition, encouraging those people with good ideas to come forward through the various program spaces that exist, and then having the resources to support them when they do provide a good idea. So I'm from our end, we can't tell you this will give you a higher return than this, but what we can tell you is that the supply of ideas far exceeds the capacity of the research space to fund them. And so I think that's true at the advanced science level when we're talking about genomics. I know we fund like 30, 40% of the good ideas that come in. The tri-agency stewards already mentioned that only 10% of the applicants get funded. That means 90% of them are they got through the filter of having it's not that bad ideas are being rejected. They're just being put in a rank order preference, and they're picking the few they can afford to fund. So this is a universal problem that we have less money directed to research than we should. And it's governments have been not bad in Canada in terms of supporting research. Industry as a whole is not. And so they're part of the gap. Agriculture used to spend in relative terms probably three times what it spends today, the producer groups and the others. on research than they do today, because the numbers have stayed the same, and prices and production levels have gone up dramatically. And so it's not a shortage of good ideas. It's a shortage of capacity to support those good ideas to realize them. So that I think, and long and the short of it is, don't look to us. Look to your team, because they know who's pitching ideas that they can't afford to fund.
So, Peter, and for Stuart and David as well, just building on that question, what's the case to be made for coordinated research, right? If we're looking at 30% return, which is good, but that reflects underinvestment, is there more that can be achieved by working better together?
Why don't I start, and then I'll give Stuart the lead. I mean, one of the coordination, there's coordination at multiple levels. There's coordination at the allocation, the seeking of ideas and the allocation of funds. Your part of the industry is less coordinated than some other parts. Some other parts have moved some of the research priority setting and allocations to the national level. And it's not your fault. I mean, the Ag Canada cluster model does lead to slicing and dicing of the research effort. And then you get more parochial perspectives rather than national efforts. That's one part of it. The other part is that the research design and delivery, that quite often programs, I don't think yours is quite as bad as many, but many programs limit where the money can be spent and how it can be spent. So it gets siloed, and the people who are not the best at delivering parts of the research end up having to do it themselves, because they can't factor it out to somebody in a different province or in a different country sometimes. So those types of coordination are both part of the opportunity. Stuart, over to you.
One of the observations that we made in the analysis of the private sector partners through the four different clusters is that there wasn't a single partner that was in more than one cluster. So you were able to engage with the important player in the private sector for a specific 5-year period, but that partner never reappeared in any of the subsequent clusters. And to us, that would be a bit of a red flag that you have these short-term engagements with key private sector partners, but are lacking that ability to engage them over that longer and sustainable period of partnership, which will increase the level of benefits experienced from the research that's undertaken.
All right. Thank you, Stuart. David, anything to add to that?
Nope, I think that's answered.
Okay. Next question comes from Harry Simons, who asks or comments. In a webinar several years ago, it was said that ROI in the hog industry in Western Canada was relatively small overall. And having reported on the industry for a long time, he's wondering how long can we continue to move forward, especially given the current uncertainties?
I mean, the evidence doesn't say that the industry has any massive immediate problem, the which is good. I mean, it's at or near the production's possibility frontier in terms of technology. Its market share is growing. Its exports are securing global markets. So those are good signals. Those are signals to sustain and in selected spaces probably increase investment in research. So I don't think the real question is, where are you in 20 years? And that's the slow wind down of agri-food sectors in many parts of the developed world isn't because anybody's antagonistic to agriculture. It's just that the agriculture doesn't sustain its productivity over the long term, and farm families move away from farms. land is bid out, bid away from farming activities to other activities, and capital becomes more costly because the returns are lower in the industry. That's a 20, 30 year horizon. I don't predict that at this point. I don't think anybody can, but the challenge for the industry is to have the research match the needs of sustaining that productivity growth for the next 20 years that it's had for the last 20 years. And so I think you're in a good space. I think every organizational space needs to look back and decide, are we doing enough? And I think this is an opportunity to tell the federal government and your industrial partners and yourselves that we can do more.
All right, David or Stuart, anything to add?
No, I'm good, Daniel.
Same here.
Okay, next question, and this will be the last question before we wrap things up here, just keeping an eye on the time. This is thinking again around what's coming around the corner. And as we head into the next policy framework, which is the provincial and federal policy framework that guides agriculture policy investments. What is the one message from this assessment that you'd want decision makers to take away? And then alongside that, what do you think is the message that producers and the pork industry should be carrying forward?
I think in some ways they're the same message, that sustained and optimally increased research, whether it's funded jointly or funded by new people, is a critical part of the long-term future of this important industry in Canada, and that requires producers come to the table with sustained and growing commitment. But that the federal government remain a core actor in this research space.
Thanks, Peter. Stuart or David?
I suppose I
Maybe just
would.
to, sorry, go ahead, David.
Oh, I was just gonna say that there's another way to turn that same message around from Peter, which is just that it's if you actually want to be a sector in a country that is internationally competitive, you have to travel with the pack. If you tap the brakes and you lose pace, it's very difficult to make up that ground later on. And so there is real risk in going off pace with the rest of our competitors, because there are plenty of other countries around the world that are happy to continue their investments, and they will come and eat Canada's lunch. So that's a certainty.
Maybe just to go back to my comment about the private sector engagement is to initiate conversations with that sector and start to identify what are some of their short and longer term research interests and how can some of those that need be better integrated into the coordination of future projects.
All right, thanks. So I see we are reaching the end of our time. So I do want to thank everyone who submitted questions. And if we weren't able to get to your questions, we will try and follow up by email, or we can continue the conversations afterwards as well. I also want to thank our presenters for joining us today, and also for the work that they've done in moving this assessment forward. It gives us data and it gives us evidence we need to continue the conversation within the industry around the value of research investment and the need to continue that investment, and also with policymakers at all levels of government around the importance of investing in agriculture and investing in the pork sector specifically. So what we've seen today is evidence that a coordinated investment in pork research, it does deliver, right? It delivers a 30% return on the portfolio, $225 million return to GDP and an 8-to-1 benefit to cost ratio for producers. And because research is slow magic, like Peter mentioned, those returns are still compounding and they're going to continue to grow over time. I think another thread that we heard about was the importance of continuity. And we're seeing that more and more. Funding is harder to access, infrastructure is being consolidated. These things can be disruptive. And so we need to think about, as an industry, how do we ensure that there's continuity? And how do we work together as an industry to make sure that we're pooling resources in a way that is as effective and strategic as possible? If today's results did resonate with you, I'd encourage everyone to act on that. Through your advocacy and through your channels, continue the conversation with government and with other stakeholders. The work that that you do through your provincial pork organizations as producers to help carry the message around the importance of research and innovation, that sends a strong signal to government, and that will certainly be important in the run-up to the next policy framework. So we'll wrap things up here, but before I do, I just want to turn it over to Stuart, David, or Peter for any last words, and then we'll wrap things up.
I think the message I'd have is find your ambition. You've got a good story to tell. In the world of science and innovation policy, you've got a pathway to market. You've got demonstrated success. That's where more money should be put, not in areas where we have problems. And so I think you've got a good case. But agriculture sometimes doesn't get the attention it deserves, so it takes a little bit more effort.
Yeah, I would just echo that in lots of the conversations I've had with policymakers in Ottawa, that their response is we need numbers to be able to convince their superiors. It takes what we've just spent the past year working on is to come up with the numbers. Now you've got them. So I think leverage the value of these in conversations with policymakers, but also the politicians. Help them understand the importance of this.
David?
Yeah, just to add to what Stuart just said, it's pretty easy to triangulate members of provincial legislatures and federal MPs, to figure out which ridings have the most at stake in this sector. And I would do exactly what Stuart just said is take this information to your local elected officials and talk to them about what's at stake. They are there as your representatives, so you need to inform them. Otherwise, they won't be able to advocate for you.
All right. Yeah, very important. And on that note, I do want to say a big thank you to Peter Phillips, David Castle, and Stuart Smythe for their work in this assessment and also for the presentation today. And also a big thanks to everyone for joining our call and for your continued support and commitment to the Canadian pork sector's research agenda. So thanks everyone for joining today. And with that, we're going to conclude today's webinar. Thanks everyone. Have a great day.